T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
You look at the Cubs, they're 2 all-stars. Are they finishing the season with the Cubs?
That was almost the sad realization when you're listening to Chris Bryant. When he was mic'd up and he was interviewed by Joe Buck, I thought that was as good as it gets when you hear from a player during a game.
And, you know, right now I still got the Cubs in my chest, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud to play for such an unbelievable city, and until they tell me I'm not, I'll go out there and give it all I got.
It was fun to hear. And also, was it melancholy a little bit? Because you felt like, boy, they're getting rid of this guy.
Didn't you feel melancholy? Didn't you feel a little like, boy?
Wistful.
It's just wrong.
It was a little wistful.
This is not a 38-year-old defenseman who wants to be near his kid.
Right.
This is a in-his-prime superstar who has made 4 All-Star games and won an MVP of the World Series. Come on.
You can feel melancholy until you start to get mad. Because you could get mad if you're a Cub fan if you want. Why are they trading him? Why aren't they signing him?
Money.
Why don't they find a way to sign him?
Money.
How could you find somebody to represent your organization any better than he just did in what he said and how he said it? Okay, it's money.
It's money.
I get it.
It's money. But I'm saying, does that make you feel better that it is all about money?
No.
Shouldn't you have money? Why don't you spend money?
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is a glorious Thursday in the fine city of Chicago. And that means it's deadline day, David. Deadline day for the franchise tag player.
Morning, Mully. Happy Thursday. Mid-July already. Yeah, it is deadline day for Allen Robinson. Bears training camp right around the corner. What an odd night last night was, without any baseball to watch. No Cubs, no Sox. Had the entire focus, if you wanted to spend your night watching a sporting event, pretty much on the NBA finals. And boy, did that game live up to the hype, and it was worthy of your attention as the biggest game on the calendar.
Finally, we had a good game in the NBA finals. And I don't mean the NBA Finals aren't any good. I just mean that they've been so lopsided. Finally, a contested game, a game where the lead changes in the second half. We hadn't even seen a lead change in the second half. It was kind of surprising that these two teams couldn't figure out a way to be good at the same time. And I think we saw that to a large extent last night. And maybe now that it's a best-of-3 series, maybe that lures more people into it. Although, if you're not watching the NBA Finals, I don't think you're starting to watch the NBA Finals now. Seems like a little late to get involved, and the ratings aren't very good, and I don't know what the takeaway is. I guess it's a league of superstars, and you want to watch the best players, and apparently we as a public crave a super team.
I suppose. I think part of it also is that this is the first year that these finals have stretched into July. It's a big vacation month, obviously. I wonder if that contributes to maybe fewer eyeballs watching the games. These aren't major markets necessarily. Phoenix and Milwaukee, you're not getting the glitz and the glamour of some of these super teams, as you point out. But boy, when you see what happened last night, that's going to be a It's hard to imagine a more dramatic finish, especially when the big block by Giannis of Ayton, that was one of the best defensive plays you're ever going to see in a clutch moment in a game that matters.
Yeah, yeah, no question about it. And you know, we'd be remiss if we did not add that the WNBA also had some stuff going on last night, and they had their a Chicagoan well represented. It was fun to read. I did not watch, but to read that Ellie Quigley won the WNBA 3-point contest last night. It's the third time in her career she's accomplished that. I don't know if you recall, back when sports was limited to the horse game.
I know.
Ellie Quigley was awful good at horse.
I just knew, and I was paying attention to that online more than on my television screen. I was watching the NBA Finals game, but I just knew when Allie Quigley's name popped up on my feed that you were going to reminisce about that wonderful night everybody played horse.
God, I love that.
You did.
I mean, it was really weird that I got so into it, but I was just so desperate for live sports in those days that even a game of horse just appealed to me beyond human comprehension. And I loved getting a chance to see everyone set up, including Ellie Quigley, like had that tiny little the little backyard thing going on. It was at Highland Park or Deerfield. Oh my God, I loved watching that.
We were the only show in town and maybe in the country that did a pregame and postgame, and you liked it so much you wanted them to play thoroughbred instead of horse just so it would last longer.
I really did enjoy that. I wanted us to do like a show horse game. I thought it would be fun if we could, but I was trying to figure out how I could use my size advantage. It would be difficult, but I know you're from Indiana, so you're a sharpshooter, so that would be a problem, but I love playing a little basketball. I haven't done it in a while, and probably would collapse on the court, let's be honest. But
there's nothing better than pick up basketball.
I always said
you can learn a lot about people that you think you know well based on how they play, pick up basketball at the gym, at the Y, during your lunch hour, whatever it is. You can find things out about people you never thought that you knew, whether it's competitiveness, pettiness, whatever it is. I think a lot reveals itself on the court during some pickup basketball.
And I have all those qualities. And
yes,
they do come through in my basketball game. I think it's a ton of fun. We played basketball. When I was in school, I had a chance to go to Loyola's Rome program. And so we played outside. There was just a court, and it was a clay court. Okay, so it was like red clay. You would be covered in red when you came in. Like, it just was the reality of play. It's like, I guess, like clay court tennis or something, only that they didn't have asphalt. They just had this clay court. And one day, this guy came out to play, and we were all like, yeah, okay. You know, just you get next game, you know, grab some guy. You know, we played every day. The same group would go at it. And, you know, the same guy would never call a foul, no matter if you slugged him or tackled him.
Of course.
And, you know, I would slug him and tackle him, quite frankly, because he just never called a foul. But this guy comes out. He'd never played basketball before. Honest to God, I thought he was joking. He got the ball and he took like four steps and he turned, and everybody kind of laughed. Like, no one understood that he had never in his life played basketball. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It was like watching kid trying. I got to tell you, I mean, I was so stunned, and all I could think was, why would you come out here and show that you don't know how to play the game of basketball? Why would you get into a basketball game having clearly never played it even in gym class?
He didn't know. He didn't know what he didn't know. That's often the case, too, when you get into pickup games. I bet you were the guy that was the rebounder that would do the dirty work. And actually, if there was a guy with a putback, you were the guy fouling the guy with the putback because you didn't want anything cheap.
You know me well. You know me well. That's right. I mean,
so,
that is exactly. I would set a pick. I would I would go get a rebound. You know, I would occasionally make a bucket, but I was more about aiding and abetting.
So I'm not proud of this, Mully, but when we talk about pickup basketball in our house, it always goes back to shortly after we were married. And it was a long time ago, and it was when I was first starting out at the South Bend Tribune. And you know my wife is from Scotland, and she moved here after we got married, and she's on her own. Her sister was in the same city at South Bend, and she's basically adjusting to life, number one, as a married couple, but two, away from her homeland. You know, she sure. moved here to be with me. And so I was so into this pickup basketball league, or every lunch hour we would go, because we were an afternoon paper at the time. I was working in South Bend, and we would go play hoops at lunch at the Y. And it was intense, and it was great, and I was still in shape, and I still felt like I could hit it. You know, I was feeling it every lunch hour. And I would come home after that and, you know, just see my wife kind of down in the dumps one day, and then down in the dumps the next day. And, like, it dawned on me, okay, I was like, what's wrong? She says, do you have to go play basketball again? And it was like one of these things that, you know, you're married when you're willing to give up pickup hoops for your wife. You know, wow. You're in love when that happens, right?
That is love. Yeah, no question yeah. about it. I got one of my buddies who still plays like every. I got a few buddies that still play every day. Still play. That's the glory of basketball. If you get into it and play basketball, you play forever. I mean, you yeah. really do keep playing. I mean, half these guys have bad knees and a bad hip, and I mean, they just can't stop playing hoop.
I would if I could. If I yeah. had the same group that or a group that I could go to every day, I would definitely find a way to try to see if I could still hit the jumper, which I know that I couldn't. So it doesn't mean I'd stop shooting. It just means I couldn't hit it.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. As long as you keep shooting, you're okay. David, how about this one? This is a major, major public relations mistake that Major League Baseball is making. Bill Shanklin of the Los Angeles Times reporting that MLB has no plans to return to individual team uniforms in the 2022 All-Star Game, and they are working with Nike on jerseys for next year. Come on. Didn't we try that and find out it failed?
Yeah. You know what's wrong about that? I think to begin with, number one, I mean, obviously we both thought that the uniforms were awful, and a lot of people agreed. But number two, even if that's the case and you're committed down the road to using the same uniforms and not changing next year, say that you're going to study and take everything under consideration and wait for the subject to change and this furor to kind of die down a little bit, because people didn't like the uniforms. Just kind of obfuscate. That's PR 101, and kind of kick the can down the road a little bit.
This is a huge marketing error. I mean, you know, they're trying to sell their game. And there are players that novice fans who want to watch an All-Star game, they don't know who they are. They don't recognize them the way you recognize Cubs and Sox players because you watched every game. So a guy is standing there at bat, you know exactly who it is. You know, right. You know, if you're walking by a TV and a Chicago team is on, you can tell, oh, that he's a left-hander. What's his girth level? How skinny is the guy? You know exactly who the player is. And that's what you should have with Major League Baseball. And if you know all the All-Stars, there are just, for whatever reason, especially with young players, you've got to market them to the public, because there are some West Coast guys that people in this time zone aren't watching every day. You're watching them when your teams play them, but you need to easily identify
yes.
who the players are, and that used to be possible, and it used to be a really cool element, and now it's lost, and it's crazy.
To your point, White Sox fans have, I don't want to say clamored for, but kind of wanted and talked about Adam Frazier of the Pirates, correct?
Sure.
Do you think that they know what Adam Frazier really looks like on the field? Because he's an All-Star, but has he, you know, been out there? Did you recognize him the other night because of his jersey? No. Could you identify and
right.
spot him in among the men in pajamas? I don't think so. Because, you know, they missed an opportunity. Major League Baseball did so many things well the other night in terms of the All-Star game, in terms of the presentation, in terms of actually, I felt like, marketing the game in a way where they took advantage of the moment. They seized it. But that was one big mistake, and I think it's just making a bad situation worse by not trying to correct it and going down the same road.
I think, do they really think there's going to be All-Star jersey sales? Is that the idea? Because if that's the idea, that's going to fail miserably. It really ought to. I mean, I get it, I suppose, if you want to make it a hat. You know, you have an All-Star hat, but everybody wears their normal uniform.
That's a better idea.
Yeah.
You know, have a hat that everybody wears. Right. It's uniform, and let everyone wear their jerseys so you can identify them and they know, you know, what they look like.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest marketing elements. You know, the NBA, because it's a five-man game, because you see people's faces, you see what they look like. You don't do in baseball. People are wearing a hat. People have a helmet on when they're at bat. The faces are not as recognizable as you would hope they would be. So there's your marketing problem when you start. Now there are certain players. Everybody knows who they are. But when we're talking about the amount of, like, young, great talent that seems to be coming through Major League Baseball, don't you wanna be able to recognize them just like that by sight? And I just think it would help a little bit if you identified them with the team they're on.
You know, the final point on this, I would think, is that the Home Run Derby was a wild success. And yeah, it's because everybody loves the long ball, and you can see that there's some soar out of the field and in that thin air. But they also, you could identify those guys. You remember them, the indelible impression it made in your memory in their uniforms. Pete Alonso, everybody else, you know, wearing their uniforms, Trey Mancini. And then the night later, they're like, okay, who are those guys? And it shouldn't be the case.
You know, it's been forever since I've seen Home Run Derby. They used to have Home Run Derby in like the 50s or 60s, and you could watch it late at night. I don't know if it was on the MLB network or wherever it was. And I used to get a huge kick out of it. Like when we were working nights at the paper, that would be on, and you get to kind of watch it. And there was a certain, there was the same sort of feel of baseball. I think one of the problems, I love the Home Run Derby. I think it's fun and I'm not criticizing it, but I like when guys hit one and you get to admire the distance of it. Now the ball is gone and it's like, they're hitting another one and hitting another one. I think when they did that three pitch thing, you got three swings so you could throw it where, and then crack, there goes, and they showed kind of how far it went. They ought to concentrate more on that. They're going too fast. I don't think you have time to admire what a home run that was, right?
That's interesting. You want to add a category. You want to judge the pose.
I know it's crazy, but I mean, If I'm a little kid, and again, I once was one, we would be in the driveway and you would just like practice somebody's swing. You would like, okay, who's this? And you would do your impersonation of someone. Wouldn't it be awesome if you could do their pose, or if you could throw somehow a bat flip in there?
Yes.
I mean, that's just a little swag. Bring a little something special to the Home Run Derby that I wasn't expecting. And again, you know, I get it. You want to hit 35 out, but my God, slow it down a little. Let's admire a couple of them and let's get the pose so we can.
That's an interesting concept.
Pose in our garage door.
And you talk about marketing. That would be the thing that people would mimic as much as anything, because not everyone can hit the ball 500 feet, but everybody could pose like Javi or flip their bat like Tim Anderson. You know, that would be a lot of fun.
It would be just another element. We're spitballing. We're thinking about marketing.
You're an enterprise guy. You're thinking big thoughts. I mean, you are. That's why we're here, 5 to 9 every morning, to have these big thoughts and share them with people.
We're going to talk to Dave Jouse later on the program. I want to run that by him. Just, you know, is there an element? Are we missing a pose, a possibility? And what again, you know, his excellence of repeating the same movement over and over was just astounding. And it's become kind of a national story. But would it still work if we slowed it down a little and got a little pose involved?
I'm looking forward to talking to him.
I am too.
It's been a while since have done that. And then he was at the center of everything the other night. And I wondered just how much he enjoyed his 15 minutes.
We can ask him later. We'll talk about it. And we got a big show planned for you. It is indeed deadline day. Are they going to extend Allen Robinson? No. And why not? We'll get into it. We know the Cubs and Sox are back tomorrow. Sox against Houston here in Chicago and the Cubs at Arizona. That's like going to the Orioles, David. A great way to start the second half is with Arizona. I was looking the other day, and I don't know why it stood out to me, but I think the Orioles are like 26 back. I want to say it's 32, something insane like that for the Diamondbacks. So hopefully that works out.
They're flirting with history. I mean, they are almost historically bad and challenging the Mets that had lost all those games. I don't think they're going to be that bad and win only 40 games, but they're going to come close, I think.
All right, we got to get to the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
With the All-Star game gone and the remnants of the 11-game losing streak remaining, how would you define the final 2 weeks of July in Cubs history? Are we at the end of an era, or when will that officially pass?
You know, we're not at the end of an era until they actually deal someone, and I think it's one of the core players. I think if you deal Craig Kimbrell, I don't think that signifies the end of an era. But if Chris Bryant leaves, then guess what? That's by far the end, and it's irretrievably the end. So I think we have to wait and see exactly what goes on. I am not expecting this. I'm not expecting DeCord to all be back by any means. And I think that the end of the Cubs as we know them will eventually occur. But I don't expect that it will occur at the trade deadline, if that makes any sense. I really think that it comes down to, you know, what moves they make versus what players are still remaining. Even, you know, even if it gets to a point where you don't give a contract or a guy signs somewhere else, that then will be the end once they're actually off the team. And until then, I'm going to fight that in my mind. I'm not giving in to this idea, and I don't think the end is actually here until one of those core guys is gone.
Well, eras don't end officially with any proclamation or declaration. They don't typically end officially or with ceremony. They just end with regret. And that is when you know something is over. And when you look ahead, you're more focused on looking back. And who's coming isn't as important as who's leaving or just left. Cubs are there. They're at the door of not opportunity, but it's an exit above the door. And I think that's the problem. And that's the realization that's hard for a lot of us to accept and embrace. I don't know that you want to embrace it necessarily. Not yet. Too soon. Too soon, because it was just a week ago today that Jed Hoyer pretty much declared the season over. Anything that happens on the field, in the standings, on the scoreboard from that day forward was deemed irrelevant, because this wasn't going to be a season of contention anymore. And I get it, because it was 11 straight losses. But that's when he unofficially marked the beginning of the end. And it's a slow process. And so the last 2 weeks of July sort of is the long goodbye begins. And it's going to be melancholy and wistful and all those things. But it has started.
I think we asked the question if it's an end of an era because we're so familiar with the success of this group and the core, and we're expecting some of them to be gone, if not all of them. I'd be surprised if all of them do eventually move on. I think the Cubs find a way to retain maybe one or two. We'll see. I think Wilson Contreras is an important part of this piece, but we'll get, I'm sure, to that in a little bit. Overall, when you look at the 11-game losing streak to end July, I think it signifies the changing of the guard. Officially, now it's Jed Hoyer's turn to figure out the next step for the Chicago Cubs team, because they were teetering on whether or not this was a competitive bunch that we want to buy or sell. And I think going into the 2021 season, Jed Hoyer preferred to sell. So I think it was a moment of clarity for this team, unfortunately. And yeah, I mean, this is, I don't think essentially the end of a Cubs successful era, because Jed Hoyer has a chance to rebound in a relatively quick amount of time if he plays his card right. So I don't think it's the end yet, but we are experiencing the last feel-good series of emotions attached to this Cubs core.
Those are tough questions to answer, because it's like, what do I say to that?
If you were an MLB team decision maker not named Jed Hoyer, who among the players with expiring contracts would you be most anxious to inquire about? Name your top five in order, please.
Ooh, have to name names and rank them too. This is requires some thought. Okay. So if you are somebody wanting to make a deal with Jed Hoyer, who announced he's open for business, obviously I think I would be surprised if we both don't have the same number one. It's Craig Kimbrel. He's the most attainable, attractive option for a team in contention. He's a closer, and everybody can use bullpen help. It just is a matter of what will be the price and who will make the Cubs the best offer. Craig Kimbrel's number one. KB's number two. Chris Bryant's number two. It's more complicated of a deal. You're going to have to extract him from a franchise he has represented well and won a World Series with and been an MVP for, as well as Rookie of the Year. So that's going to be complicated. But hey, if you got a wish list, Chris Bryant is on it. Whether you are a team that wants to put him at third base or in any one of the outfield spots, he can play them all. So he is number two. My number three target is not the one you would expect, maybe, Mully. And maybe this sounds crazy. I think that if I'm an opposing general manager, I'm going in asking about Kimbrel, asking about KB, and then going in and seeing how good of a deal can I make for Jock Peterson. Probably not going to have to give up a ton. This is somebody, if you have designs in October, has proven himself in the postseason. He frankly has more home runs than Anthony Rizzo right now in fewer at-bats. He's a guy that could get hot and you know, I don't want to say carry a team for a while, but he could have that in October. He's done it before for the Dodgers, pretty high level and high stakes. So I would think Jock Peterson is third for me. And then I would go Javi Baez. I think the Cubs are less likely to trade Javi, though, moving forward. And then the fifth guy on my list would be Anthony Rizzo. His bulky back would give me pause. I would not want to give up much for him, even though he would give me a left-handed power bat, perhaps. I don't know that the Cubs are going to have many suitors for Anthony Rizzo. It could be tough to deal him.
Yeah, I'd be bargain shopping. I'd be looking for bargains, and I think I would try to squeeze one of the good Cubs players out of Jed while he was busy trading everything else. Just maybe if he got a little confused, I could jump in. I think Kimbrel is your number one guy because he can win or lose a World Series. He's a closer. There is a shortage of those among contending teams, and he'd be a great piece on any bullpen the way he's pitching right now. So I think that's correct. He's the top dog. I would love to get Chris Bryant. I think Chris Bryant would definitely be my number two player. I'm going to go with Kyle Hendricks. Again, I don't think they're trading him, but if I'm a general manager and they're trading everyone, or I feel like everything's open, hey, what do you want for this guy? I don't have to worry about spin rate. Have to worry about a guy not having experience as you talk about a playoff run. So I'd be really interested in him. Then would be Javi, because, you know, there's flash, there's showmanship, there's way to sell jerseys. I would love to get a guy like that and build around him. And my last guy would be Wilson Contreras, who, again, I don't think is being traded. I might even move him up if I felt like he was coming out of contract. But I wouldn't want anything to do with Anthony Rizzo's back and his injury and his contract demands. I'd be really looking at Willie as a guy that could help my team a ton. And I just think it's hard to put him in order. But if I'm looking for a bargain type thing, I would want to go after all the really super good players after they trade a couple, thinking that maybe they'd release them without thinking it through enough.
Do you think that Wilson Contreras' comments had anything to do with the Cubs' willingness to listen to offers for him during this trade portion of July?
I hope not. I really hope not. But that is certainly a possibility. I mean, I don't know. Here's what I know. I really do believe that he crossed a line in David Ross's mind. I wonder if he did in Jed Hoyer's. And I don't think Jed looks at the team in the same fashion, but I think it's personal for David Ross because you're kind of hitting him where he lives. I don't know that you're doing that to Jed Hoyer. I don't know the comments he made. I don't know how offended Jed would be by them. So I would hope that there would not be, that wouldn't be a reason. Those comments wouldn't be a reason. But it's certainly a possibility.
I am always a fan of trade discussions. Trade deadline season, especially when your team's in it. On the White Sox case, that's a lot of fun to be buyers. But for the Cubs' sake, this is a transition type decision-making process for Jed Hoyer. And I agree with Craig Kimbrell being at the top of this list. You saw what happens across the last, what, six seasons, the value of having a lockdown closer at the back end of your bullpen. I don't know what he's going to cost. I feel like the Cubs can take advantage of his value there, but he's probably the most high-leverage piece the Cubs have to dangle out in the trade market right now. Then it's Chris Bryant. The value in a former MVP, plays multiple positions, great in the locker room, and he had a stretch that kind of signified that this season, okay, yeah, he's having his struggles leading into the All-Star break, but this is as close to Chris Bryant that we've seen across his career. So I think he's very valuable, and I think the Cubs are going to ask for a pretty hefty return, realistically knowing that, hey, this is we understand it's a rental. Then how about this, guys? Andrew Chafin. What about the value of a left-handed bullpen piece and the success that Andrew Chafin's had?
Cost, good call.
Right? I mean, cost efficient. I think it's $2.5 million on the books. You see how there's not a lot of left-handed value in the bullpen out in the trade market. So maybe the Cubs can get something for Chafin. Number four for me, Jock Peterson. Success in the postseason. Left-handed pop. I know the other stuff, the on-base and the batting average, isn't as good as you'd like to see it. A lot of slugging there. And how about Ryan Tepera? Another bullpen arm under the radar. I mean, these guys, you know, everybody needs help in the bullpen. So if you can maybe package those guys together, and Tepera, Chafin, Kimbrell, let's do it.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question.
If you're Jed Hoyer and believe you can sign a particular player, be it Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, or Anthony Rizzo, would you consider trading that player and then doubling back in free agency, a la Aroldis Chapman and the Yankees? Is that a dangerous game or an excellent way of maximizing player value?
I mean, listen, if we're having fun with trade deadline, then we really need to have fun. If you could have a secret arrangement with a player or a secret understanding, hey, we're gonna let you go over here and win a World Series, but you're coming right back. We've got the long term deal. Here's the contract. You can see it. If you want it now, I'll give it to you. But you know, you could add a couple players for us if you were patient about it. I'd be all over that. I would definitely want that to happen. In fact, is there any possibility that the Schwarbaum could come back? Since he's gone for a year, why not turn around and re-sign him? I know you don't gain anything, but is that a guy that you would look more appealing to you and maybe wants to come back? I would examine and I would exercise all those possibilities. I think it's a fantastic way to maximize the potential of a player. I just think that when you let someone go, there is a grave danger that they never return. So I would be awful careful about it. And if I were trading someone, I would understand it's unlikely that they're coming back. But I love that idea. I think it's a real genius move if you could pull it off.
You know why we always reference the Aroldis Chapman example when we talk about whether or not a free agent would come back to the team that traded him like he did with the Yankees? You know why we always reference that one? There aren't other examples. There aren't that many other examples. This doesn't happen. This is really pie in the sky stuff. This is like what you tell your fan base to keep the masses at bay and to pacify them when you just traded somebody they want to keep. I think this is wildly unrealistic. And if you think that for a moment you're going to trade Chris Bryant to the Mets and wink, wink, nod, nod, Chris, when free agency comes around, then we're going to work things out with Scott Boras because we know that we can get that conversation done. No way! No way. This is like when your girlfriend goes off to college, your high school sweetheart, and you dated for 3 years, and then you say, you know what, honey, we're going to keep in touch and we're going to date, and then all of a sudden, yeah, things are going to be just fine, just I can't wait until Thanksgiving break, and then no way, that never happens. Then it's like she breaks your heart, Okay, so the Cubs are going
right
to break.
Now. You're breaking hearts right now by even referencing that. Of course that doesn't work, the long-distance romance, but please don't tell young people.
I'm sorry. A dose of reality is valuable at 5:40 on a Thursday morning, Molly. Have it with your oatmeal, okay? Ugh. Because the Cubs and final point here. Jed referenced the Jason Hammel experience. Okay, that's another one. Okay, but even he acknowledged the fact Jason Hammel was here for 5 months when he signed in February of 2014. They traded him in July, and then they brought him back. There was no sentimental attachment to Jason Hammel. You're more sentimentally attached to some pairs of socks that you have than the Cubs were to Jason Hammel. So this was not an example that was apt or applicable to the current situation. So no, this is not going to happen.
The power of love prevails, and we know that Chris Bryant loves the Chicago Cubs, right? This is dangerous, guys, really dangerous. If you're going to say, look, thank you, we got to trade you for value, but we're going to try and sign you again this offseason, you know what Chris Bryant's going to say? Okay, give me $300 million, and the Cubs aren't going to be able to do that. So I'm with you guys. I'm 100% in agreement. This is not the way that they should play it. I do want them to maximize value, but realistically, if you're trading one of these guys, I can't expect them back.
I hope you guys understand we can't get into the details. I'm sorry in advance for any questions I can't answer, but I promise I'll do my best.
If you were the Bears with today's deadline to work out a long-term contract extension with Allen Robinson, which the NFL Network reported would pass without a deal, would you pay A-Rob $20 million per season? Has your answer changed since the end of last season?
This is an interesting question, and I feel like not just because it's today's a deadline, which I think we both agree will pass without a deal, but my answer has changed, and my thinking on this has evolved a little bit because I think back in the first time there was a deadline when the Bears were contemplating whether or not to put the tag on Allen Robinson again, is that you wonder, what does he mean to the franchise? What does he mean to this offense? And everything about the Bears is before Justin Fields and after Justin Fields. Before Justin Fields, I don't know that you really could justify investing $20 million per season in a wide receiver for a quarterback position that you really hadn't serviced, that was serviceable to you, and you weren't really revealing a plan that was dynamic offensively. I think when you get a young quarterback as good as Justin Fields is projected to be, and the way that he's changed the franchise, I might be more inclined to do that. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I might be more inclined to dig deep and find a way to justify paying a number one wide receiver who in my book is a top 10 wide receiver. I don't know that he's a top five wide receiver, that's a different debate. But if he's a top 10 wide receiver and you have a quarterback that's as dynamic as Fields can be, I might find a way to make a deal. And if it's $20 million per season, I might be willing to pay that because that is the going rate. Now, there's unconfirmed reports the Bears were willing to go that high. I don't know that until we talk to more people to find out if that is indeed the case. But if they were and he turned it down, I think he's making a mistake because when you look around the league, $20 million a year is not bad money for a guy with his credentials, and it would put him in the top five pay-wise per season. So I would be willing to do that. I don't think it's realistic they get a deal done, and I think that we're looking at probably the final season of Allen Robinson in a Bears uniform.
I think it's fascinating. I think there's a lot of elements of this that you have to consider, and I think that I think you're right, David. I think they're looking at the final year of him. They can always tag him again if they are so inclined. If they discover over the course of the season that they can't live without him, they could always do it again. It's not a wise move to do with the salary cap because the percentages jump, but I think that it is certainly conceivable. But I believe Devontae Adams will be available as a free agent next year. He is the same age as Allen Robinson. Do you think he's a better player? Chris Goodwin is 26 years old. Will Fuhrer, 28, I believe. There are going to be receivers that will be available on the free agent market. And maybe if you're going to spend your money, you might want to look at who else you could spend it on. Now, I think Allen Robinson has been excellent. And I'm expecting him to have another 1,000-yard receiving season, which would move him into the top 10 of Bears receivers of all time. He's a couple years away from being the top receiver in team history. That's how well he has done and how bad the Bears have been with the forward pass low these many years. So it is not beyond the realm that that he could be a record-setting player for you. But it's, again, it's how they put their offense together, how they use their pieces, what they're looking for from their receivers. It's a question of whether or not a guy like Darnell Mooney is going to advance and be as good as they expect him to be. Can some of these guys that are on the roster actually turn out to be better and more effective receivers than we thought? So player development comes into play, free agency comes into play, and the draft will come into play. So I would be very hesitant to commit my millions and millions of dollars to that player in a long-term deal just because there are a world of possibilities outside it. I would hate the idea of getting stuck and winding up with the musical chairs game going on and everybody sitting there. But I got to tell you, I'm kind of with what you're saying, David. I think it's an awful lot of money. And just the very nature of the deal that he got, he's put himself, he's kind of priced himself out of your market in a way.
On the surface, in the perspective of Bears fans, they're saying, give me Allen Robinson, do it. This is a top 10 receiver, and it's going to help Justin Fields across his career. When you take a step back, at least for me, I think about Khalil Mack, Robert Quinn, Eddie Jackson, the money on the books per season. And if you're handicapping yourself to a highly paid, skilled position receiver like Allen Robinson, then you think, how good are the Bears going to be over the next 3-4 seasons? And then how does that influence the cap? And can you, if without Allen Robinson, distribute that $20 million hypothetically to other positions of need? You know, we're questioning the depth of the corners in the secondary this year. You know, maybe you can save that type of money for free agency at other positions, right, is what I'm getting at. As well, you can find, I agree with both of you, talking about looking at free agent options. The wide receiver market occurs every year. And I think that's the one position you can get away with if you sign someone, maybe a secondary receiver, not so much getting paid top receiver money, that you can get by with and hopefully develop a receiver that you draft. Because, I mean, those are the types of positions that eat away at your salary cap outside of, you know, the Khalil Macks of the world who are rushing the quarterbacks all the time. So if I'm the Bears, there's too much unknown, because I don't think the Bears are going to be good, like consistently good, over the next couple of seasons to justify retaining a guy that expensive who plays that premier of a position.
That is an unbelievably great question.
What was your reaction to U.S. Olympic team star Bradley Beal being placed in health and safety protocols, according to USA Today, raising questions about his availability and reminding everyone how tenuous the games are nearly a week away from opening ceremonies in Tokyo, where only about 15% of the population is vaccinated?
Oh, this is just not good. I mean, this is, don't even, I hate talking about it, but the fact of the matter is, we just talked about Bradley Beal being used for half an hour of the game against Argentina because they want to round him into shape because he's such a big part of it, and he's right, such a good player, and they wanted him to be, you know, used to playing with those guys. So you've just wasted another one of your practices, your workouts, your exhibition games. Listen, the NBA is seriously good, and I know that we've talked about the sky is falling and the disaster, and can they play together, and can they get it together, and can they be able to play as well at the end of games as the beginning, and all the rest of it. But that it's a great combination of players. You can certainly survive without Bradley Beal, but this underscores exactly what's going on with this Olympics. We are in the midst of a pandemic. You know, you've got all sorts of protocols that are put in place. We talked to our buddy Bob Vassilopoulos about the idea that you get there and you're basically spending a couple weeks in your hotel room, and you can go out and you can go to the game, and then you come back. You're not really supposed to go out and socialize, and then the Olympic president shows up and he goes to lay some flowers somewhere like the next day that he's dead. Like, that's great that you want to pay homage, but the issue is you're not supposed to go out, and the whole country is kind of infuriated by it, and you got no fans there, We're doing the Olympics because it's a TV show in the midst of a pandemic, which is obviously pan. It's a global issue, and they're not vaccinated, and these things could shut down at any minute. It just seems more likely than not that this story is going to be one that is felt by a lot of different athletes once they arrive in Tokyo, if they're allowed in, frankly.
So two different responses. Number one, sports is always local, so you look at how does it affect your sports locality, your teams and athletes involved. Zach LaVine becomes more important if Bradley Beal's not available. And Zach LaVine stepping forward and playing a bigger role is something that we saw happen the other night when he was in the starting lineup for another injury, but he did respond very well. And really, if Zach LaVine is given more responsibility on this stage with the stakes as high as they could be if they continue to play through this tournament, that's good for him. You know, that's really you trust him to be able to step up and rise to the challenge. So from a very local perspective, nobody's excited about an illness or an injury, but you do wonder about the possibility now that expands for Zach LaVine. Okay, so that's sort of the myopic way to look at it. Big picture-wise, Molly, you're exactly right. You take a step back, and these are the COVID Olympics brought to you in Tokyo. You know, these are the COVID Olympics that may not, you know, see a closing ceremonies. You don't want to look at it all catastrophically like that, but this is a serious matter, and this is just one guy on one team. But how many other teams in other countries are dealing with this possibility of contact tracing, and there's going to be other athletes that are contaminated or spread the virus or test positive, and then what? We don't know. This is Bradley Beal now, but what else happens with the other Olympians? So it's grim, I think, and you want to be optimistic, but you also want to maintain and be realistic. So this is just a sobering reminder, and we're going to have probably one a day until the opening ceremonies, and then let's hope that we don't have to interrupt the games. But this was not a good headline to read.
It is a reminder, David, and it's when you read about this stuff, only 15% of the population out in Tokyo vaccinated. I mean, that is incredibly concerning, and it reminds you, as much as people want to believe that this pandemic or the COVID strain is gone, it's not, and it's going to stick around for a while, and people still have to be responsible. And it's unfortunate to the athletes, right, from all over the world coming together in a centralized location that, you know, they're all going to be exposed potentially. And it's a reminder, like you said, David, like you need to be able to take these protocols seriously. And it's not going to be good for the athletes to sit in their hotel room, as you referenced, Molly, some of the protocols that even the media has to go through covering these games. It is an absolute sobering reminder that, one, we need to be responsible as people, not only, you know, here in our own circle, but across the world, because we're all in it together and it's not over yet. And again, yeah, go Zach LaVine. That's great. But let's all stay healthy here.
David, I just to clarify, I know that's just a local thing, but how many players are you hoping go down so Patrick Williams can get involved?
Wow. Now, that would be mean-spirited, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Like, I don't think that you can't precision pinpoint the players you need to clear out of the way to get more Bulls involved.
Yeah. I think it'd have to be a pretty healthy amount.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, I did wonder watching Game 4 last night, the NBA Finals, like if this Olympic team slide continues, not just by losing players but losing games. Can they get anybody off these two teams to Tokyo fast enough? And because they'd be in shape, that you wouldn't have to worry about their conditioning. They'd go from Game 7 to, you know, the first game of the Olympics. That'd be kind of fun.
Well, mercifully, Greece has been eliminated already. Otherwise, if Giannis went over, we'd have a problem.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want Giannis necessarily to beat the U.S. team, but I was thinking Booker, Chris Paul, guys like that. Who might be welcome additions to a team that's, you know, not in stride, not hitting the rhythm yet, and now they're impaired because they don't have a full complement on the roster.
It's a fair point. All right, we're going to talk some baseball. We'll talk some trades. I love that question. Who goes first? I think they're all kind of connected. What symbols the end of the era? What trade would do that for you? And if you were Jed, who would you move and who wouldn't you move? 312-644-6767 is the number.
Also, if you're Rick Hahn, what is your priority list this week? Do you start taking calls, or do you sit and wait because you have the luxury of being patient and you wait until teams are more desperate near the deadline?
You better beat Houston if you really want to keep the price low. 312-644-6767, Mully and Haw on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.